From Alice in Wonderland. Begin at the beginning, the king said gravely, and go on till you come to the end. Then stop. If the temple is as destructive as our defendant Lola Adams alleges, how did she come to join it?
Cult recruitment is typically done in one of four ways. By a loved one who's already a member, by a stranger, typically a member of the opposite sex, by a cult-sponsored event like a seminar or a movie, or online, usually through social media.
I had just moved to Gainesville, and I didn't have a lot of friends. No family. We moved there because James got a new job. I was still freelancing as a web designer. I didn't leave my house all that often, and I wanted to meet new people. So I started going to this yoga studio in West Hill. I'd always been into yoga. It was there I met Gregory.
Yes, we met at Nava Yoga. I went 3 times a week. I remember the day Lola first came in. She seemed observant and curious. She read every flyer on the pin board and asked the staff questions about each of them. She was confident in her poses and seemed comfortable in her own skin.
There are too many fallacies about the type of people that join cults. The public assumes these people must be weak-minded or troubled, have a damaging past, or have no social skills. There is research conducted amongst ex-cult members that confirms people are most vulnerable when they're going through a stressful time in life. This could be starting a new job or going through a breakup, any major life transition, really. But the character traits, there's just no model for a recruit. They could be anyone, young, old, uneducated, PhDs, social butterflies, hermits. There's no mold.
It's true, Lola didn't conform to any expectational standard. She had a healthy childhood, no rebellion beyond the typical beer sneaking and boyfriend smuggling. She graduated college from the Savannah School of Art and Design, got married, lived in Savannah with her husband until they moved to Gainesville. No criminal or psychological history to speak of. She was normal.
Just a bright, lovely woman. So we struck up a conversation and I learned she was new in town. I remember her inquisitive nature and her enthusiasm for yoga.
I was attracted to him. He had this amazing yogi shape and he seemed better at yoga than our instructor. I thought he should have been teaching the class. When we were done, he told me about this meditation group he attended Saturday nights called Metta Meditation.
Metta Meditation is also called Loving Kindness Meditation. You open yourself up to receive love and kindness for all things, and you project love and kindness outward while you practice. It's nurturing, it's affirming. It changed my life, and I try to expose as many people to it as I can. Lola seemed the perfect person to invite.
It's very common among destructive cults to introduce people to a series of courses or seminars in the beginning. These seminars do 3 things. 1, they make you feel wonderful, whether it's through hypnosis, psychiatric exercises, or drugs. These workshops invoke an emotional response within the individual that is euphoric. The second thing these workshops do is mislead about whatever the group's true nature is. For example, in Scientology, you are introduced to a variety of courses in which you go through repeated therapeutic exercises, though they don't use the word therapy. These courses can have a very pleasing effect. They can help you get over past trauma, gain confidence, feel powerful. However, throughout these courses, you will never learn about the real genetic makeup of the Scientology organization. You won't learn that L. Ron Hubbard is worshipped as a deity. You won't learn the doctrine that an alien overlord named Xenu shipped his people off in spacecrafts that landed in Earth volcanoes. No, no. These secrets are divulged little by little during and following the indoctrination process, which could take 30 years. The Moonies are another example of successful recruitment techniques. They invite their recruits to workshops featuring simple sermonizing and prayer. They talk about the vague and comfortable goal of unifying humanity. They don't talk about the fact that they worship Sung Myung Moon and want the Unification Church to take over the world. These introductory level classes are sometimes called appetizer courses or workshops. Early onset euphoria is critical to a cult's successful recruitment.
How do group members justify lying to their recruits about their organization?
Very successfully is the answer. Group leaders teach their parishioners that people are only capable of accepting the truth one step at a time. In Scientology, a parishioner will progress up what's called the bridge to total freedom. They cannot learn the material in the next level until they've completed their current level. So maybe on level one, if you heard what was on level five, you'd think that was ridiculous and leave. But after four levels of solidly consistent mind control techniques, by level five, you're willing to either believe or rationalize what you're hearing. In the Moonies, they tell recruiters that recruits are spiritual babies. You wouldn't give a baby a cheeseburger to eat, right? You can only give them what they can handle, mashed peas, formula, etc. So these recruits, these spiritual babies, are only capable of handling one element of truth at a time.
The Metta Meditation Circles were held in a house on the east side of town at 418 East University Ave. The circles were funded by the Temple of Contemplative Science, and the owner of the house, Mark Gibson, is a member. However, his description of these circles varies largely from that of Lola Adams.
I was actually there. Those were my circles, and suggestions that I lied to or manipulated attendees is completely offensive. We were there to practice meta-meditation, and that's what we did. We shaped perspectives in those circles. We opened minds. If you look at our material, if you watch our videos, you'll see. It was the farthest thing from sinister you can imagine.
The defense asked Lola to describe what happened to her when she attended the meta-meditation circle.
I drove to the residence on University, started late on Saturday night. When I got there, Gregory was outside waiting for me. He took me inside and introduced me around. There was about 12 to 14 people there. Everyone could not have been nicer. It was this warm, invitingly lovely crowd that wanted to learn about me and welcome me. We had hot tea and cookies while we waited for everyone else to arrive. I remember thinking, what a cool crowd. I was hoping to find a group of people like this.
It's a tactic called love bombing, and it's present in every single destructive cult. When a person is first introduced to group members, they are treated like a king, praised, encouraged. It's a powerful technique designed to leave the recruit wanting more.
What happened next?
We all took a place sitting in a circle. Some are on chairs, some are on the floor, cross-legged. I sat in a chair, and the owner, Mark, stood in the circle and told us all to relax and close our eyes. What happened next was like a guided meditation, which I'd done several times before, so it didn't seem that foreign to me. He ran us through some relaxation techniques and then some visualization exercises.
What sort of visualization exercises?
One involved entering a dark cave and being unable to see, and then growing comfortable in that darkness, that stillness. And then with our eyes closed in that dark cave, feeling light begin to illuminate the space all around us. And we visualized that for a while. And he told us that was the light of our collective consciousness working toward a common goal, that of illuminating, and that we were becoming one.
How did you feel after that exercise was completed?
Amazing. I felt truly amazing after each one. I was relaxed and I was centered, and we all seemed to be feeling the same things. And I felt like we'd all worked together and aligned our intentions, and it made me feel close to this group of strangers.
Can you walk us through another exercise?
Yes. One time, Mark asked us all to lie down next to each other on the carpet of his living room. And he took us through our relaxation exercises. And then while we were doing this rhythmic breathing, he began speaking to us about the concept of metta meditation. He repeated the words loving kindness over and over. He was instructing us to project loving kindness into the universe and then accept loving kindness back into ourselves. I know this sounds very radical, hippie, but in honesty, it wasn't that different than guided meditations I'd done before. It all sounded so familiar. The breath, mantras, intentions. I'd been there, done that, and I was always innocent. With these classes, the one difference I can look back and reflect on now was a focus on what Mark called blocking.
Tell us about blocking.
Well, in prior meditative work, if a thought entered my mind, I was instructed to let it float away. Thoughts come and go, just let the thought retreat. But in these circles, it was more aggressive, and it targeted insecurities about what we were doing. If a negative thought entered our heads, we were encouraged to reject it, push it away, banish it. We could only allow positive, accepting thoughts to enter our minds. Through repetition, we all became very good at this.
Can you give us an example?
Yes. If we were lying on the floor and began thinking, "This is silly," we would exhale sharply and imagine ourselves pushing that negative thought away. We were taught that through doing so, we open ourselves up to all the rich benefits metta had to offer.
The practice of loving kindness is about emitting and receiving love. If you are consciously having thoughts that go against that principle, it's self-defeating. I taught everyone that came through my door to block out doubtful thoughts. You have to open yourself and remain open so all energy can flow into and from you.
Cult expert Stella Laughlin.
When I first heard about the blocking they practiced, it was a red flag. It's essentially the same thing as thought stopping, which is heralded technique that's universal in cults. You are trained not to allow a doubt, not to allow a thought that goes against your leader or the mission of your group. So when I heard that this group was using purported meditation practices to train their parishioners' minds to thought stop at such an early time following their induction, I became alerted to the efficiency of TCS.
Tell me, Lola, how many times did you participate in one of these metta meditation circles?
3.
Within how long a time frame?
Within a week. 2 on Saturdays, and they had a Wednesday night circle I also attended.
And what did it feel like to you, attending these circles?
It felt exceptional. I felt lighter than I had in months. I was surrounded with these loving people talking about unity and grace. I was centered, and I realized I'd been battling anxiety for a while with the move to a new state and an unhappy marriage. These circles very quickly became my happy place, and I couldn't wait to go back.
When was the first time you heard the name Ty Byman?
At my 3rd and last circle. I got there early and spent time talking with Mark and a few of the other members, ones that seemed senior. They mentioned a retreat they were going to the following day. It was a 2-day retreat in the Florida Keys. They said it was being run by Ty Byman, who was the leading expert in modern meditation. They acted surprised I hadn't heard of him.
What did they say about him?
They told me he was so experienced at metta that they could feel him when he meditated. They said he had tapped into a new realm for practitioners. The whole thing was vague, but they seemed genuinely excited about this retreat. I remarked that I wished I could go.
But you were unable to.
Yes. They told me it had been booked up for months, and they let me know the next time one was scheduled.
Did they give you any literature or marketing materials for the retreat?
No, but they did pull up a website about Thai. The copy was about as vague as my friends were being, but I got to see Thai's picture. Got to look at his face.
How did he strike you?
You know, it's weird. I don't know if my memory has been affected by what happened later, but I remember the experience of seeing him for the first time. His face was soft and marked with age lines that made it look like he smiled a lot. He had bone white hair that was brushed backward straight away from his face. That looked soft too. And his eyes were so blue and wet looking. He just seemed so kind and like he radiated peace. I remember that.
Did anyone speak to anything about Mr. Byman other than his expertise in the field of meditation?
No, definitely not. It just seemed like they regarded him as an expert. And as other people filtered in, they agreed. Everyone seemed to know his name and wished they were going on this retreat.
What was the name of the retreat?
Didn't have one.
Okay. What happened next?
We meditated like usual.
Was there anything unusual about meditation that evening?
Yes. Normally we do a visualization in which we are alone, but that night Mark asked us to visualize ourselves in darkness, in a space devoid of light or feeling, and then to imagine someone, anyone, approaching us and standing before us.
Who did you picture?
I mean, believe it or not, I actually visualized Thai, even though I'd only heard of him that night. I guess it was because I'd just been looking at his picture. I don't know. I guess I thought that meant something at the time.
What were you told to do next?
To imagine this person placed one hand on her chest and the other hand on her forehead. And to really feel like the hands were there. Mark went into great detail while he was guiding us. Feel the heat of this person's hands. Feel the weight of this person's hands. The slight callousing. The ever so faint pulse in the person's digits. He asked us to align our heartbeat with that of this person. The whole thing was so vivid. I felt like his hands were on me. I felt them.
Were you asked to imagine anything else?
Yes. The same way we projected loving kindness and received loving kindness in previous meditations, we were asked to do that again. But this time, instead of writing it all out into the universe, we are told to send that loving kindness directly into this person and to feel that loving kindness stream back into us from them. It created this circular experience. I pictured it flowing in one of his hands and out the other, just that constant streaming circle.
How did you feel?
Relaxed, peaceful, happy.
Stella Laughlin.
Hypnosis is widely used by cults and widely misunderstood by the public. Hypnosis typically doesn't occur in a doctor's office with a watch dangling in front of your face, or at a county fair with volunteers clucking like chickens. It happens much more subtly than that. Hypnosis is what occurs when you enter a trance and receive suggestions. We are highly suggestible while in trance states.
What constitutes a trance?
A trance is characterized, firstly, by a heightened state of suggestibility, secondly, by diminished critical thinking, and thirdly, by disassociation. Anytime a person is focused internally and not externally, that is a form of trance. We go about our day externally focused, with our five senses interpreting our environments. We see, feel, hear, touch, and smell everything around us. When we are in a trance, all of our sensory ability is focused inwards. There are degrees of trances. Every time you daydream, you are technically in a trance. These are usually very light, and you can be woken from it in a second if someone calls your name or you notice a change in your environment. Deeper trances can be induced by skilled professionals. And because we are very susceptible to suggestion when under a trance, cults exploit these hypnotic practices regularly. Transcendental meditation is the most direct and famous example of this. David Lynch is a figurehead and has a foundation for TM. TM encourages practitioners to meditate several hours every day, promising greater and greater abilities as you progress, including levitation. In its introductory levels, it's fairly innocuous, but involvement can have dire consequences, including bankruptcy and physical ailments. Soka Gakkai is another destructive cult that teaches members chanting the words Nam-myo Renkyo repeatedly in front of a rice paper scroll will bring you anything you want. Tina Turner and Patrick Duffy ascribe to this belief. These people were taught only their chanting could save humankind from destruction.
How are people convinced to believe such outlandish claims?
They sound outlandish now because I'm revealing the most absurd things in these groups' teachings. New recruits don't learn about those. These groups and TCS hypnotize new recruits, teach them how to hypnotize themselves, and then encourage or force them to do it regularly. If you spend hours of your day in a disassociative state in which critical thinking is suppressed, your ability to gauge reality is compromised.
Do all cults use hypnosis?
I believe hypnosis in one form or another is an integral component of every destructive cult, yes. It may not always look like meditation or chanting. Scientologists, for example, use a process called auditing, which is another way of inducing disassociation. There are numerous methods of inducing trance states in members, but certainly guided meditation is an effective method.
In your opinion as an expert, was Lola Adams under hypnotic suggestion to trust Ty Byman?
Yes. She was being prepped for the experience she was meant to have upon meeting him.
When we finished meditating that night, 2.5 hours had passed. It felt like one. I was amazed at how quickly it had gone.
How did you feel?
Clean.
Okay. And what happened then?
We had some tea. I said my goodbyes. I drove home. And the next morning, I woke up to a text saying there was an opening in the spiritual retreat down in the Keys. They had one spot that had become open and I could have it. Everyone was driving down together and I could go with them, but I had to decide immediately. We had to go immediately.
What did you do?
I had responsibilities. I had a work deadline that I would absolutely miss if I went to the Keys. I had marital counseling the following night that I'd miss. I hadn't even... There were rooms left still unpacked in my house. It was not an opportune time for me to go.
What did you do?
I went. Of course I went.
Why?
Sounded like this unmissable opportunity. Everyone the night before wanted to go, and somehow Mark and the few people going with him had decided to gift me with the invitation. The retreat sounded so special and exclusive, and that spot opening up suddenly felt like I didn't believe in signs, but it felt like a sign. A sign I should go. And at the end of the day, I just really wanted to. I really wanted to see what was down there.
Here's what happened. Lola came over while I was socializing with my friends already in the group. We were excited about the road trip we were leaving on the next day. She asked us where we were going, and we told her. It was a very natural thing for us to discuss Ty. He's the leader of our meditation movement. We were seeing him the next day.
Were you making an effort to educate Lola about this man?
No, she was asking us questions. We were just answering them.
And that night during meditation, did you intentionally set the stage for Lola to envision Ty Byman while under a trance?
No. First of all, I didn't put her under a trance. We all meditated together, and I didn't say, picture Ty Byman. I said, picture someone. It's not my fault or our fault that Ty is the one she picked. I didn't even know that. How could I?
Okay. And the following day when you informed her that a spot had opened up in the meditation retreat?
Yes.
Was that orchestrated? I mean, did a spot actually open up, or were you always planning to invite her?
A spot opened up.
Why did you invite her and not one of your more senior practitioners in your circle?
I don't know. She seemed so enthused about it the night before, and we really liked her and her energy and her spirit. She was the first one I thought of, and she agreed to go immediately.
Was this meditation retreat free?
No. It cost $400, plus we split the cost of gas, food, all of that. Altogether, it was probably $600, and we all paid that, and we all thought it was worth it.
It was a 6-hour drive to the Keys and a 72-hour workshop. The time between Lola receiving that text and leaving her house with her bags packed was approximately 90 minutes. The following is a YouTube interview with Lola's ex-husband, James Miller.
What did you think when you got home that day and your wife was gone?
Oh, shit. What do you think I thought? I was pissed. We were supposed to go to therapy the next day. She left her breakfast dishes on the kitchen table, for God's sake. She didn't even put them in the sink. I found a note from her saying she'd be back Thursday night. This was Sunday. I mean, I remember standing there thinking, what am I doing this for?
Did she tell you where she was going?
A meditation retreat is what she said.
Did you have any indication it might have been a cult?
I don't know what it was. I know it was more important than being home with me.
Did you contact her, try and locate her?
No. I cleaned her dishes, and I didn't see or talk to her again until Thursday night.
The defense introduced a piece of evidence to support their theory that TCS was intentionally recruiting members by using manipulative methods. The evidence was a memo circulated through email amongst staff members of TCS back in 2013. It was later leaked online by ex-TCS member Pamela Need. The memo reads, "Beloved union members, I write to you with vigor after receiving the countless fledgling members who have joined our new temple here in Boulder, Colorado. After witnessing and contemplating the mobilization techniques we've used here, I am writing to share a few insights to help you secure promising fledglings to our union. 1. When you see the initial spark of understanding, or burgeoning enlightenment, in a fledgling's eyes, it is urgent you act quickly. Do not allow this precious fledgling to return to a sea of ignorance before fully understanding all that we are and all that we do. 2. Give your fledgling their greatest chance of success by bringing them to a safe space, be it the temple, your home, or a retreat. Choose somewhere your fledgling can reflect on and learn their own boundless possibilities, away from the negativity and distractions of the world. 3. Contemplative science principles are being beautifully proselytized around the world, but your fledgling's chance for emancipation will always be highest if you bring them to me, to my person, my spirit, or my teachings. Please share me with them, and them with me, so I can help you in your journey of enhancing our union and humanity. Yours with love, Ty."
What do you guys think of Mark Gibson?
I feel really actually quite stressed out when we were listening to the evidence in that, because it just rang so true to me. Like, I've told you guys I work in a bar.
Right.
The reason I worked in a bar was I went on a date with this guy, we went in that bar, then, you know, we were speaking to the staff, then we were playing drinking games, you open yourself up, you kind of tell your deepest, darkest secrets, and then I go back in and they offer me a job, and then we listen to the same music, and it's like, suddenly I've built this family and this network, and I could be Lola. Like, I feel like it just...
Acceptance.
I could have been brought in so easily, so kind of vulnerably.
Yeah.
Did anyone at that bar encourage you to kill someone?
Well, that's way down.
That was a big jump.
I think at this point, we're just...
We're just trying to understand how she could even be recruited.
The methods that TCS used, they were pretty traditional. She was obviously manipulated, but I'm really
Wait,
torn.
Campbell, you just said she was obviously manipulated. When Mark was on the stand, how did you personally feel? What was that feeling inside of you? How did you react to his kind of nonchalantness? Like, what did you feel? I want to know.
I felt that he was not being honest.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Van?
No, he sounded perfectly honest to me. I mean, it was like, this is all that happened. This is the fact of all that happened.
No. I think Lola talked in great detail about the process of how she was recruited, how she was enticed and brought in and made to feel the love and the friendship and the safety of being there.
Was she being recruited?
Oh, definitely she was being recruited. I mean, there was that memo that came out.
I mean, look
about
up.
How to manipulate a fledgling. She was clearly a fledgling, but at the same time, I felt that she was a person who was going through a lot of stress.
Yes.
A lot of loneliness.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was open. She was longing for something.
She was,
and they sensed
she,
that.
She
in
was
her.
Vulnerable. I yeah. see that,
but,
okay?
But may I just want to say one thing. She told us about the process of how she was, and we can interpret it as manipulation, but how she was brought in. I felt like she was still talking about it longingly. Supposedly she's been deprogrammed, but I felt like she still yearned to be back there.
Let me ask you
a
question.
She talked about it with great love, not with resentment.
And she was clear. In my opinion, if somebody was hypnotized, they wouldn't have their facts so clear the way Lola was talking about it.
Why
so I don't know if I'm just not convinced.
Why? Because there's a connote, like a...
Have you ever been hypnotized?
No, I haven't, but I've definitely been in a state of trance in the same way that Stella was talking about trance.
The same way?
Yeah, she talked about how you daydream. We all enter basic states of trance. I mean, the human mind enters two states of trance every single day when you wake up and when you go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tell me that when someone says something to you, and I don't know if anyone here, you know, has, I mean, I know some of you have husbands and wives, but...
And kids.
I mean,
and I got a daughter too.
When you're waking up in the morning and your wife or your kid walks up to you and says, "Oh, you know, Daddy, can I have this new toy?" Blah blah blah. You're like, "Yeah, whatever." You know. You're
I don't just... say yeah, whatever. That'd be a horrible parenting, by the way. Just want to lay that out there.
That's avoidance.
Look, I do a little bit of mind control with my daughter.
Well, there you go. So, but what I'm saying is I see where she's coming from, and I understand this, like being susceptible to trance and being susceptible to people kind of giving you these ideas. And I mean, to add to Banks' point, she's talking about how she went into just working for a bar and they made her feel amazing. I mean, imagine going to this place where they're preaching that, you know, love and kindness is what they constantly want to be spreading in their meditation.
Yeah.
You know, and so I
this is, it's just, look, daydreaming. Every human being does daydreaming. I'm sorry, daydreaming is not hypnosis. Let's not go that far.
No, I'm not saying that
don't forget
hypnosis.
Stella is
I'm
a defense
saying,
witness. Please, let's try to be focused on
I
that.
I understand that. I'm saying I understand trance and that it's very possible, and I think even Campbell's kind of been suggesting that mind control is very possible, which I do think it is, and as we've all heard, that hypnosis is something that actually happens, and then it's not this thing that we all kind of have this preconceived notation about, that it's this like, oh, someone's dangling a clock in front of your face and it's all this voodoo witchcraft stuff. It's not. We're actually learning that it's a very scientifically based thing, that it's something that happens naturally, and that it's very easy to induce if you follow the right steps based off of what we saw from this memo. They have their steps.
Let me ask you guys a question.
What do you mean you don't? You just said 5 seconds ago that you totally believed in all of this.
No, I think it was manipulation.
You just said it was mind control and that the memo went out.
I don't know if she said mind control.
I did not say mind control.
She said manipulation.
I said manipulation.
I don't know if that was a memo or a letter, by the way.
I can't hear anybody who's speaking right now.
She was a weak person.
Yeah, Alex recommended and not talk over each other.
Let me ask you guys a question really quick. Okay,
yeah, go ahead.
Did you guys ever go to church?
No.
I did a little bit. When you
went to church on Sunday or whatever day it was, when you walked into the church and the priest was up there and they're speaking, were you hypnotized?
I suppose it could be considered a trance. Have you been married before? You're married now, right?
I'm married. I have a wife. I've got two kids. I got one daughter. I got one son.
So what did you want?
What did I want with what?
What did you want out of that relationship?
I mean, I get everything I want out of my relationship. I get love and acceptance from that relationship, but I'm not hypnotized.
Did you want to put your wife in your girlfriend at the time, in a trance in order to get her?
What? What are you alluding to, Francis?
What I'm saying is that everyone puts people in trances from time to time in order to get what they want.
He must be under a trance.
Yeah, it sounds like you're suggesting that Alex has manipulated his wife into wanting to love him.
Not manipulated in the bad sense, because you firmly believed that you could give her everything that you...
Well, Alex is
everything that the world
is, so...
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think we should go back and talk about the urgency that the TCS kind of whisked her off to this retreat. Yeah. You know,
was it urgent?
Yeah, I mean, she had 90 minutes to pack up and leave the house.
And the memo says it's all about acting in urgency.
Now, let's look at the facts. Let's look at the facts that were presented.
Okay.
She had a marriage counseling appointment the next day. Her husband said she didn't show up. She went to a meditation retreat. She chose not to resolve her marriage. Mm-hmm.
A failing marriage, which,
really,
by the way,
that into him,
a marriage,
so.
A that could happen to anybody. A man whom she killed later at point blank. She left to go, oh, I thought it would be good. So would a marriage counseling session.
Isn't this,
and she chose not to do that.
This is her ex-husband, not her current husband.
She chose to, you're right. I agree with you, Van. She chose to escape from the reality of her current life to something that was
And you're
was
telling
lovely.
Me you've never chose to escape from the reality of your current life?
Of course
it's not
we
the
all
issue
do.
Here. She's
exactly.
not on trial.
But I didn't kill anyone.
But that's what we're talking about right now. We're talking about, is it even viable that she was recruited and hypnotized and manipulated?
She was, well, definitely manipulated, and I have sympathy for that. She was... We know that Lola escaped. Maybe she was in a trance at times when she was meditating. We know that she was manipulated. But does she sound remorseful?
No.
Does she sound like she longs for that state again?
You can fake a sound.
You got to go back
to remember.
You
can fake a sound. People who are married who have sex fake sounds all the time.
I don't think she's faking anything.
She
this
was
is a woman who killed a man that she supposedly loved.
She said
she
killing
was
him was the hardest thing that
she's
ever
had
did.
To do. Yeah.
She loved
still,
her husband.
Yet still did
we
it.
Heard her
well,
say
that's
that.
An easy
well, but,
thing
but
to
why?
Say.
It goes back to the
are you religious at all?
It goes back to the reasonable whether or not she had a reasonable belief she was saving people's lives. Remember yeah, that. It's
right.
all comes
so
down to
it's
that.
So it's very similar.
I don't know that I believe she really believed that.
Okay, so let me just ask you a question. Do you think that Ty and Mark and the group, you keep going back to that memo. I think it was just a letter, but that memo. You think this was a part of a systematic approach to get members, and the whole thing was a setup to recruit people. Was that recruitment?
Yes. They 100%. Wanted to. They used the word
Absolutely.
Emancipation. They wanted to remove her from everything that she knew to bring her into their world.
I mean, and how creepy was it that the last tidbit on his note was "bring them to me"? I mean.
Yeah.
That just, I don't know. I mean,
that creeped me out.
That sounded like a power play, personally.
It's very power play. It's very dictator.
I wouldn't want my daughter to be brought
yes,
to that
I
guy.
Agree.
I'll tell
oh,
you
yeah.
guys right
yeah.
that. I'll
hey,
tell you right now. That creeped me out.
So, are any of you, is anyone here religious at all?
Didn't we just have this discussion?
Yeah, I'm
so,
religious.
Well, so let's try and compare it to TCS to like your God, for example. What if, you know, okay, let's talk about beliefs in general. You know, there's multiple different types of beliefs, right? You know,
well, we're trying to focus on recruitment here, so if you're going to go down
well,
the religious
route, personally, I don't feel that she should be victimized in her recruitment. I mean, I think it's foolish in order to sit back and consider all the options.
Okay.
Right? You know, she didn't take – she let irrationality, I suppose –
She was vulnerable. She
yeah,
was vulnerable.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bad marriage.
Yeah, yeah,
that can happen to anybody. That can happen. God forbid that happens to my daughter someday.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. So what I'm saying is, what if The reason was is because she had that longing for acceptance, that longing to be.
She did.
She
bit hook, line, and sinker.
Yes.
She fully went for it.
Wait, hold on.
Exactly. So,
go ahead.
However, that's still an irrational thing. You know, humans are emotional. We understand that.
Okay.
So it's still irrational, though. So
how is it irrational?
Well, how is it irrational if she didn't, if she was vulnerable and she didn't feel one, she wanted acceptance?
Yeah,
what's irrational
to her? Because a feeling is a belief. She believed that she felt that way. Okay. Doesn't mean that it actually was, but to her,
and that's
it
the
was.
Whole point of this case yeah. is whether this was to her a belief or not. And it sounds
reasonable.
So she like you're
felt,
thinking that.
So she felt like she was. Victimized yes. by the world, and she chose the recruitment
okay.
as a possible solution.
I see where he's going. I see where you're going. Yes, that actually makes sense. You finally are making sense. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I feel like that makes no sense.
She was a willing victim of TCM and their.
TCS,
pardon me.
No, it's okay.
A willing victim.
I just don't understand.
She was a willing, eager victim.
Right.
She was vulnerable. Nobody wants to be vulnerable. Nobody wants to be in a failed marriage.
She agreed with their ideas.
But some people have buyer's remorse,
Campbell, wait. Hold on. There, a lot of what they were saying is what a lot of religions say. Love bombing. Who doesn't want to give love? Peace, acceptance, thinking of positive things. That can happen to anybody out there.
What
I'm asking here is, and what we're here to discuss is, was what TCS doing? Was that recruitment? Was it sinister? Did they put her under hypnosis? Did she go there willingly or not?
I mean, call me crazy, but I feel like we've all, in some way, shape, or form, already said that everybody believes it's manipulation and that she was forced to be.
Yes, I think we all agree with that.
I don't know if I agree with that.
They wanted
really?
To remove
Tell us
her.
Why.
But even, I feel like even Francis is agreeing with it in some shape or form.
Let's listen to Alex. Why does he not agree with the rest of us?
Look, when Mark Gibson was up there, I thought he was a little flippant, but I didn't get creeped out by him. Like she had her side of the story and he had his side of the story. She wound up murdering her husband, mm-hmm. and you know he's somebody that has meditation groups on Saturday nights. I've done meditation. Meditation has done some very positive things for me.
I can account to that. We do it a lot.
You're a Vietnam veteran. I mean, one of the best ways of helping out with PTSD is to use meditation. And you know, I'm not as creeped out by Mark as you guys are. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I'm not creeped out by Mark. I actually think he seems like a very amicable, charming person, which is all the more reasons I believe that he totally 100% took advantage of Lola.
I think the thing for me that really creeped me out was the meditation where she got told to be in a dark place, imagine a stranger approaches and puts his hands on you. You know, that's encouraging her to let down her boundaries, to trust a stranger. It's a very intimate kind of situation to imagine, and to me that was really creepy. Could imagine the calluses on his hands.
Banks, why did she choose him instead of her mom?
Because for the entire week that she was there in this meditative trance state, the only thing they were talking about was
was asking what Banks was thinking.
The third meditation did they even mention his names.
That's right.
Banks. She could have chosen her mom. She could have chosen her former husband. She could have chosen a friend, a coworker.
Well, this is all coulda, shoulda, woulda.
But she chose.
She made a choice, is the point that I'm making.
Well, that's what Francis is trying to get at.
But she was influenced. There's so many programs on this, on mind control, and how, you know, you see billboards again and again. It's suggested kind of influence.
100%.
And you have the right to use your discretion.
Then why did they show her the picture of Ty just before they introduced this intimate kind of trusting exercise?
So your interpretation of that was that was a manipulative practice. Francis, what do you think?
What's your favorite soda, Banks?
I don't drink soda.
Okay. What is it?
I drink straight tequila.
Okay, what's your favorite tea?
It goes the other direction.
No, hang on. I'm serious. I'm trying to get somewhere.
I drink green tea.
Okay. What about green tea do you like?
That it's dairy-free, that it's
Hey, can we get on track here, guys?
Yeah. I'm getting
too far out.
No, I'm serious. So I'm getting there.
I'm not playing lawyer here, but you know, you only have this much. I'm playing the judge. Where are you going with this?
I want to get out of
the reason I'm saying is because
this place is creeping me out.
You're right.
4 weeks is enough.
Yeah, that's right. This place, you know, it's kind of sucks in this room, doesn't it?
There's no windows.
Yeah. So,
we have a job to do.
Right. Here's the thing, is that influence happens all the time. She was influenced by something that made her choose green tea. You were influenced by your wife in order to choose her. You were influenced by going to recruit into Vietnam in order to go there. You were influenced by your story writing. You know, you had something that happened in your life that made you choose who you are today. You had something that happened in your life that allowed you to become the nurse or the caregiver or whoever you become. You have that choice.
Absolutely.
And you are influenced by people in those things, yet you still have those choices.
Some people have choices. There's a lot of people that have choices. There's a lot of people that have bad things that happen to them.
So we're still unclear here.
But it's not
here.
About the choices. It's about the influences that have helped to make those choices.
It is about the choices.
She's at a supermarket and in front of her is green tea and black tea. Which one do you think she's going to choose? The green tea, because she's seen the green tea and billboard everywhere.
Let me use the example of the military. There's an indoctrination, and ask anyone that's gone through boot camp. There is a very severe indoctrination. They break you down, and then because you've got to survive life or death, and then you go into battle. But here's the other thing: the Geneva Convention allows any soldier in battle to refuse an order that is not in alignment with martial law and the Geneva Convention, and he can refuse. If they say kill that civilian, he could say that's not part of the Geneva Convention. I will not do it, and he has the right to do that.
Let me ask you a question. Since you're bringing up the Geneva Convention, you're bringing up Vietnam, you're bringing up what you went through, do you know any POWs?
No, I know other vets, though.
And were they ever captured? Were they ever in a place where people were trying to indoctrinate them?
They went through boot camp.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the enemy. Were they ever in a place where they didn't have control over any choices?
I'm going to guess yes.
You do that and know that they were POWs in the Korean War and in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. So those people didn't have a choice. Those were bad things that happened to them. So right. I want to differentiate.
What I'm choosing is to go to war in the first place.
Some people get drafted.
Some people don't even have the choice.
Some
to go
people
to war.
Get recruited.
Exactly. And that's actually what we're talking about here. So,
but in spite of the recruitment, they still have discernment and freedom of choice. And there are laws for that in the state of Florida allows those choices. She has to make a reasonable choice. And she allowed their activities to satisfy her desires. She talked about Ty. He was so nice, and I saw his face.
Yes, but they did it in stages. They spoke about not feeding a baby a bird.
She was a divorced woman, and she spoke about
she wasn't
this
divorced
guy.
Yet.
Yeah. So she was in a relationship she didn't like, and she glorified she glorified Ty and Mark.
He was glorified to her.
No.
I don't know about that.
In a manner, in her testimony. Oh, he was so nice, and he had this silver hair, and he just looked. He had a little brother with.
She was a woman.
It. She was a woman who wanted to get out of her marriage and was looking for a man. All right, she was needy.
She was looking for something.
She chose to see him instead of someone in her family or someone else that she could bring good vibes to. She made those choices.
Yes, she was looking to escape from her current life into something more appealing.
So what we were here discussing was the manipulation and everything that...
And we agree.
So this all comes down to one very thing at the end of the day. Whether they were manipulative, whether there was a memo, whether there was anything, this all comes down to free will. Is that what we're all saying here?
Yes. I'm saying yes.
I still go back to we only had her word that she bought that gun.
Okay, we're not even talking
the trigger.
About the
gun. I know. We're not there right now.
Not even
we're there. Not there. We're on the recruitment. This is what we're discussing. We're talking about the recruitment practices. The way I'm hearing everything, this is very helpful. The way I'm leaning right here is whether it was manipulative, whether anything happened or not, she still chose to go down that road.
It sounds like It sounds like TCS had the free will to do what they wanted to do, and it also sounds like that Lola had the free will to do what she wanted to do.
They gave her what she was looking for.
We're denying that she had free will. We're talking about the influence that made those choices.
Like the thought stopping, the blocking that they encouraged. For, that's huge. That's such an...
They didn't force her to not go to her marriage counseling session.
No, they didn't force her to do anything. No one held a gun to her head. We're not saying that. We're not saying
that. But that was right at the beginning, too. That was so. Say they spoke about the five stages of indoctrination. Yeah. That was at stage one.
But she was a willing.
You guys are acting like she's some cold-blooded, manipulative person here. We're talking about a regular woman.
She killed somebody.
Yeah, but we're talking about a regular woman
Him in the back.
Who was manipulated and was taken advantage of and turned into this whatever. Yeah. I mean,
over years, too.
Over years. It's not something that happened over a day. And then one day they woke up and were like, here's a gun and this really hot guy. Go take a look at him and then murder your husband. That's what you guys are all acting
she
like.
Bought she bought a story.
She bought a story.
Because she was lonely, vulnerable.
She bought the story.
You're acting like you don't connect with anything. Like, you bought the story of the military, which is why you joined the military.
Yes,
because
you buy into it.
Not everybody believes that bullshit.
But I didn't kill my CO. I didn't kill my sergeant. I didn't kill somebody because I thought a lot of lives would be saved.
Well,
I followed.
Well, I bet you probably did kill someone in the Vietnam War.
We do have to look at the evidence step by step and look at what happened to Lola and what influences all along the way. She was in this TCS for 6 years. 6 years. So we have to look at what happened during that whole period.
And we've got to remember it was gradual. It wasn't all at the beginning, you sign up and this will happen.
It was
and
all in stages.
We all, I think we all agree she was a willing participant.
A willing participant. But when, if ever, is participation no longer a matter of will? Next time on Deliberations.
Ty came down the stairs.
Unfreeze, change, refreeze.
A red flag started going off.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: Jury, Rudy Sallow, Kate Mullen Wallace, Jim Donnelly, Mark Smeltzer, J.P. Stanley, and Sherry Michaels. Courtroom: Katarina Tana, Ramondo Isom, Cindy Lopez, Cooper Hardin, Matthew Brian Steiner, Tina Carbone, Charlton Van Horn, and Jonathan Neal. On our next episode, Lola attends her first group retreat. See you soon.